Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner. Carrie believes if you want to experience clarity in business and in life, then discovering who you are, why you're here, and where you're going is a must. The Igniting Souls podcast is dedicated to help you do just this. And now, here's Carrie.
Hey folks, it's Carrie Oberbrunner, and I have with me, watch out, an amazing gavel, not to mention three incredible authors. We're going to be talking about a very edgy topic today. In fact, let me set this up. By the way, if you can share this, that would be fantastic. We're going to be giving away some prizes today, and we're all the way from Canada. But here's the question, folks. Your family is run by governance. Your marriage is run by governance, your business, your church. This is extremely relevant. And Deborah, I want to introduce you first. Deborah, tell us a little bit about yourself and congratulations on the new book. Why is this important today?
Well, thanks, Carrie. Thanks so much for having us. I'm Deborah Brown. I'm the CEO of Governance Solutions, and governance has been my passion for about 30 years now. And, you know, we just know that governance matters. It makes a difference. It makes a difference in everybody. And we don't know it.
Absolutely. We have with here some amazing guests, David Brown. And I'm told he's wearing a certain sweater on purpose. Talk about that, David.
Yeah, ever since Deborah and I spoke at a conference in Albania, I happened to be wearing this sweater, probably because it's cold in Albania. And this has become the governance go-to sweater now. And so people are saying, why aren't you wearing your red sweater? It's not really officially a governance solutions governance event unless you've got the red sweater on.
And it matches the cover.
Exactly.
I'm colorblind, so I had no idea.
That's right. Well, before we get to our next guest, I got to share this, Deborah. This happened today. By the way, people are in Edmonton weighing in. We have people that are saying, hey, I think from Texas, Leah.
Hi, Leah.
Amy, all kinds of people. So again, folks, we're going to be giving away a copy of the second book. This thing is a beast in a good way. How many pages is that thing, man?
It's 600 and some. We can give away a copy of that one too.
Well, Gary, I have them right here. So I'm going to be giving these away here, signed copies later today. But here's something I got to share. This was laying out today on my desk because I told my wonderful kids and wife that I was doing a book launch today. And my daughter picked it up and started going like that. And then my wife said, oh, Addison, are you going to be a judge when you get up or when you grow up? And, you know, then the family started bantering and they talked about the power of judging someone's life or death. I mean, today's topic, I'm not blowing smoke. This is a life and death conversation because there's a lot of big businesses that are hanging on by a thread because of poor governance. Rob, is this true?
It's especially true now, Carrie, because these are unprecedented times. We've got massive changes in the environment, in the economy. COVID-19 has changed the landscape for so many organizations. And without great governance that understands that change and can truly help the organization adapt to it, then it's very difficult to navigate the risk that we see today.
Talk to us about, Rob, talk to us about decisions. I mean, in the States, we've been getting decisions handed down to us. In Ohio, Mike DeWine, you know, he says we can't go to school. He says we can go to school. We have to wear masks. We can't wear masks. Why? Let's go to Rob here. Rob, why why does governance go bad?
Well, yeah, that's why does governance go bad? And when it just in terms of those decisions you talked about, that really those decisions and those changing decisions and those various decisions from state to state and province to province here in Canada, we've got competing risks. We've got the risk to the pandemic and the risk to health, and we've got the risk to the economy and the risk to the well-being of people because of lockdowns and shutdowns and constriction of the economy. So every decision that's made, especially in government, has to weigh those two risks. And different people come to different conclusions on which one is going to take precedence. That's so that it's really important to understand what your priority is. And to really then understand that you can't make a bargain with a virus.
Ooh, that's quotable. Right. You can't make a bargain with a virus. I like that. Deborah, let's go back to you, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Where does governance show up in a marriage?
In a marriage?
In a marriage.
Well, governance is a system. Here's a definition for you. Governance is the system by which organizations are directed and controlled. Ooh. So if you think about an organization, where is the organization headed and how are you going to get agreement on where you're going? And then to ensure it's in control. And by that mean, we don't mean, okay, you know, husband, okay, wife, you're under my thumb, under my control. What we mean is, are we going in reasonably, are we reasonably sure we're going in the direction we want to go? So whether it's in a corporation, whether it's in a church, whether it's in a school or a hospital or in a marriage, governance is really deciding on what's your system going to be for direction. Where are we going to go together? What's our vision? What's our mission? What are our goals? And how are we going to know that we're getting there? How are we going to measure that success? So that's governance in a nutshell. Everything you need to know about governance is right there, Carrie.
That's so good. Well, I love Table of Contents because it pretty much as a publisher, and I'm honored to be all these amazing people's publisher. By the way, I can't give away this one because this one is signed. This is awesome. So let's talk about the table of contents here because, you know, there's plenty of businesses and churches and marriages that aren't doing well. How did you make this? You made this scary times. Why are scary times governance needed even more? Like, good times are fine to have governance, but why in scary times do we need even better governance? Who wants to take that one?
That's one for David.
Yeah, David. Well, you know, when you look at the table of contents of the book, there's 10 chapters there, and these aren't new. These are the 10 steps that a board is going to take to effectively govern at any time. But what occurred to us early on in the COVID pandemic is that organizations were threatened with their very survival in an unprecedented way, more than ever before.
Mm.
You know, in almost every industry had a complete shakeup. And so rather than panicking, you know, our reaction was, let's go back to the basics. We have this 10-step system. It works. Let's walk you through it in terms of how you might adapt these 10 steps in really rough times and figure out how am I going to survive? And not only how am I going to survive, how am I going to prevail? How am I going to soar? How am I going to come out of this pandemic better off than I was before? How am I going to, you know, take some chances and make some changes and put in place some innovations that I'm going to learn from and I'm going to benefit from and society's going to benefit from? And at the end of this year, this long, hard year, I'm going to ingrain them into my way of thinking, into my identity.
So good. It's so good. So, oh, there goes my light. Here we are now. So what I want to talk about is we're going to give away some prizes. We have people all over British Columbia. We have Saskatchewan. By the way, I love Canada. I really do. I love, we've been to Montreal. We've been to Ottawa. We've been to Quebec. We've been to Toronto. I love all those parts. And I know it's a huge country. Let's talk about this book. We're going to be giving this away. So I'm going to give it away to the person who shares the live stream. If you've shared the live stream, type in the word share. And we're going to pick a winner, Michelle, who lives in, I believe, Montreal. He's gonna pick a winner here in just a moment. What does this book provide? Because I have a personal advisory board. I don't know if anybody, authors, coaches, speakers, anybody out there has a personal advisory board. But why is this helpful, even if you have a personal advisory board?
Well, you especially need it if you have a personal advisory board. That book, Governance Solutions, really is, it's a lot of our clients call it their Bible, and they buy copies for their entire boards.
Yeah.
And there's anything you really need to know about good governance is in that book. You have a question, the answer is there. And it follows our 10-step system for governing organizations. And I think, you know, the best part of the totality of that book is it tells people what their job is. Ooh, we've been doing this for 30 years. And the number one question that we get from board members is, what's my job? What's my role? Mm-hmm. And they're always either going over the line and getting into things they shouldn't be getting into, or they're not reaching the line and not doing what they should be doing. And it's just really because they don't know. And so this book tells them everything they know, soup to nuts, about governance. We call it our signature book because it took 30 years. That book is 30 years in the making.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. And Rob, when people say, what is my job? By the way, this is just fantastic, folks. It's the whole book. I mean, it's got stuff on succession. It has stuff on committees, roles and responsibilities, the five types of boards. Oh my gosh, Rob, why do people say, "What is my role?" What is that question really asking?
Well, really, what's going on in most organizations is there's tension between the CEO, the operational system, and the governance system. And it's a natural tension. Matter of fact, I would say that if there's no tension there, there's a bigger problem than if there is some tension there. Because you want to hire a great CEO. It's a strategic role. But then you've got to delegate enough authority to them so that they can run the organization, run the organizational side of the company, and then hold back enough authority as a board so that you're comfortable and that you are governing, you're providing high level direction, and then you're gaining confidence in the directions being followed. That's the role of the board. But, you know, all board members come up through organizations. They're usually ex-CEOs or ex-VPs. They understand operations, but they a lot of times have never really been ingrained in governing. And there's a paucity of training in governance. So that's why these books are so important, because it really gives people some grounding of knowing when they are on the right side of the line, because that tension, sometimes the CEO is trying to push governance back, and sometimes the board is trying to push the CEO back, and understanding where the real line is that sometimes gets crossed is really the key to making that tension workable and actually making that tension work for you.
This is great. We just topped 50 people watching this live. I got to give some shout outs. We have FFD, Farmer Properties, shared it on Twitter. Ina shared it on Facebook. Gaelic shared it. We have people on YouTube right now. Marina, Valerie, big congrats to you. Trevor, Alberta. I mean, people are blowing this thing up. Michelle, thank you. Leah, Maureen, Jean, how good does it feel, David, to have all this love? Oh my gosh.
That's great. I love it.
You guys are rock stars. So this thing is a $50 value, and we are going to give away. I was just told who is the winner of this. Don't worry, we have other prizes. We even have a prize valued at $1,000. So stay on, folks. Gaelic Sonia Bronstein is the winner of this. So our team is going to get in contact with you and get this book to you. I'm going to share a confession here. So my confession is this. I was in an organization that had such bad governance, such poor governance, that I went into a depression every Tuesday, because every Tuesday was the meeting. And it was so poorly run, where we would talk and talk and talk and talk. The meeting was supposed to go 90 minutes. They felt so bad that it went 4 hours. They would invite lunch, and then we would go another 3 hours. A 7-hour meeting every Tuesday. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is my life. And I saw year one, year two, year three, 12 years of my life go away. And it didn't need to be like that. Why do some boards, why are they dysfunctional?
Well, a big part of it, and I'm kind of, the assessor in me is listening to you. And one of the big issues is certainly people don't know what their role is. So they talk about things that have nothing to do with direction and nothing to do with control. They talk about everything that the CEO or the pastor or the executive director is doing, but they don't step back and talk about their own job. So they're talking about all the wrong things because they don't know their job. And I think the second thing is the person leading the meeting, the chair of the meeting, the person with the gavel doesn't know how to be a good chair, or they've chosen somebody who might not have the right skill set for being a chair. And so we cover that in that Governance Solutions book. We've got a whole chapter on on chairs and how to be a great chair and how to choose a chair and the difference a good chair will make. So I think those are the two biggest issues. People don't know what to talk about because they don't know their job, and you may have a weak chair.
I love what one of our guests just said, and you might think that I'm embarrassed or I don't want to share this comment, but I'm going to share it. Here we go. This person said, "That's why you lost all your hair." So, amen. That is why I lost all my hair. That is the truth. And I don't mind owning that. So, is it bad for me, David, to say that in my company, I'm the CEO, it's a multi-million-dollar company, it's, you know, we're crushing it. Is it bad for me to say I stink at leading meetings and it's not my gift and I want to delegate that to someone who is gifted at it? Is that bad as a CEO for me to say that's not me?
No, that's the right thing to do. I'm reminded, we did some work a few years back with the Billy Graham Association. And Billy Graham, famous guy, great leader. He's the CEO. I mean, he's the founder. He's a legend. And he himself put in place a board and had the board choose a chair. And he handed over the reins of the governance to those people. He said, "That's not what I do. That's not my thing. That's not what I'm an expert at. I need to subordinate or put myself, you know, under the direction, the governance, the stewardship of a competent board of directors, very carefully chosen people, and a chair that can lead these meetings." That's what they do. I don't pretend to do it. I've been doing it for years, but I got to hand it over and turn it over to people that are going to make this place better. And he's well known for putting good governance in place in an organization where many of those founder organizations, they didn't until the founder was really passed away. And then they had a generational crisis on how they're going to govern. So that's the right thing for CEOs to do. It calls for some humility, but it's the right step.
Well, that's why I think our company is doing well, because I said, that's not my gift. But you're right. It does. And we're going to, this is good. This is a great chat. I want people to weigh in. Hello, Anita. Sally says, hey, I want you all to weigh in, the social media crowd. If you were running a company, maybe you are, and governance is not your gift and you're supposed to be the CEO, I'm just going to ask the crowd here, would you step aside or would you govern and have everyone in the room be frustrated? What would you do? I want to hear that. Rob, can you share with us, has there ever been people that you've worked with that don't have the humility to say, I'm going to step aside. Can you give us any horror stories?
Definitely, there are people.
You don't need to say the name.
I was going to say, definitely, there are people that we've worked with that fit in that spectrum. Mm. But I certainly wouldn't want to tell any stories on any of our clients. That would be very much against our principles.
So we'll just say that some people exist out there.
But the thing is, if you don't have some separation between governance and the CEO, in other words, if the CEO is also the chair of the board and they're running operations and running governance, you get this circularity of accountability. Mm. And it's really hard for the board to hold a CEO accountable in that situation. And there's mechanisms you can use to work around it. But for the most part, best practice would be for the CEO not to be the chair of the board. That someone who's really good at being a chair is the chair of the board. And then the board can do their work of providing direction along with the CEO and then gaining confidence that the CEO is doing their job. They can only do that as a separate entity from the CEO. It's really hard to hold yourself accountable. I know a lot of us think we can, but it's not really true.
All right. So listen, we just topped 60. So many people were jumping in. We're going to give away another prize. Before we do, though, Deborah, you and your team are really humble, because most people don't know this, but I don't mind bragging you up. I mean, your company is the industry leader. I mean, you are the go-to. You know, in any company, when you're the industry leader, there's some pressure. There's some perseverance, though. Like, this didn't just happen. Imagine this. This is a thought. You couldn't become the industry leader unless you drank your own medicine. If you weren't governed well, you wouldn't have the right to be able to govern other organizations. And I think the proof is in the fact that you are an industry leader. Talk a little bit about us, because, you know, we may know Nike, we may know Tesla. A lot of us don't know who the industry leader is in governance because we're not in that area. But tell us a little bit about your company.
Well, I can tell you a little bit, but maybe I'll do it in the context of the book, Governing in Scary Times, this roadmap to organizations to navigate and survive in an emergency like COVID. You know, organizations have not only survived, but they've thrived through COVID because they had three things in common. And I think these are three things that are common to us at Governance Solutions. They pivoted rapidly, they prioritized ruthlessly, and they planned adaptively. And so you mentioned Nike, and it's a little bit like Nike says, just do it. And successful organizations have embraced change rapidly without going through the usual business cases and trial steps. Many of the changes that they've made are ones that they've been contemplating already, and they intuitively knew that they needed to make them, but maybe for one reason or another, they were putting them off. And so with COVID, innovations, big innovations, were green lighted. They were funded quickly. Everybody just quickly moved to yes. And so this is just like individuals when we're faced with a crisis, and individual leaders, whether it's me leading Governance Solutions as we consult and teach people all over the world, whether it's someone like me or someone who has a sole proprietorship or somebody who doesn't have their own business. When you're faced with a crisis like we were with COVID, we're put in this position where we have to choose whether to be overcome by the crisis or whether we're going to innovate and pivot. Mm. And I know, Carrie, you did a lot of pivoting when COVID came. And so often the change that we make, though, is one that we've been thinking about for a long time.
Yes.
And I think that happened with COVID. The platform wasn't burning enough. It didn't give us enough courage to jump off the platform. Mm-hmm. And so I think that a lot of people who have gone through this, if they're pivoting and if they're prioritizing ruthlessly and they're planning adaptively, mm-hmm. then anybody can become the industry leader, whether you're the industry leader of your family or of governance consulting around the world.
So tell us those three again, because Michelle, if you can write that down, those were huge, folks. Use those as three takeaways. What was the one again?
They pivoted rapidly.
Pivot rapidly. So change, I've heard that in life, change, you know, is essential. And the only, here's what it is. The only person who doesn't like change is a baby or something like it, with a dirty diaper, something like that. But change is going to happen. Change is going to happen. And you say,
if you're not changing, you're moving backward.
There you go. So you got to pivot rapidly. What's number two?
Prioritize ruthlessly.
Ooh.
You know, when COVID hit, you had to choose, what are we going to do with our finances? We have a limited amount of finances, and we may not have a job. We don't know how long we're not going to be working, or we may not have customers because the economy is shut down. And so you have to make some very quick prioritization. And like I said, people quickly moved to yes, and they threw things out that they've been hanging on to for years and knew they needed to throw them out.
Oh, that's interesting. So
but
this,
they didn't.
This scary times was the catalyst
yes.
to say, we're doing it right now. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. All right. And then the third is they planned adaptively. And so what I mean by that is they didn't get, it's important to plan, right? You want to plan, but you don't want to hold on to it so tightly that you're married to it, especially in a crisis when things are changing rapidly. And so you want to plan adaptively. And then when we hit that new normal, we've got some plans in place. We know what our priorities are now. And we can step into that plan, into that new normal. You know, I was saw in the news the other day, there was a pilot, an airline pilot, and he had, of course, he'd gotten laid off. And so he needed to pivot. He needed to Yes. take care of his family. And so he could have sat back and said, woe is me. Oh my goodness, COVID has happened to me. And now what am I going to do? But he didn't. He said, I need to get out there and make some money. What industries are thriving? Well, we know Amazon's thriving. And so he went and he started to work at an Amazon distribution center and found out that he loved it. And part of what he loves about it is that he's home now and he has more time with his family. He feels healthier. And so he's thinking, well, I'm going to prioritize these things in my life now, not just the money I get from being a pilot. And when the new normal comes, I want to go back to flying. I like flying too, but I'm going to go back in a different way. So I'm not gone so much. And I'm going to reprioritize based on this pivot that I've made.
That's fantastic. All right. So let's talk about this, David. And we have a question that came in. We're going to answer that, but we do want to give away the next prize, and that is that we're going to give away the actual book that we're talking about today, Governing in Scary Times. Amazon wouldn't let us put COVID because, you know, Amazon is Amazon, but the board's roadmap for governing through and beyond an emergency. I'm actually glad you put scary times, because COVID will go and there'll be another thing that comes, and this book will still be relevant. So,
well, Michelle, you may not remember it, Carrie, but you named that book.
Shut up, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's why I like it. No, because Amazon literally.
Well, you helped.
Yeah. As a publisher, they flagged a lot of COVID stuff because they didn't want books coming out where people weren't medical professionals and that type of thing. But you did make it relevant. So great job. David, here we got a question. Governance has had to move to a digital platform for many people, like Zoom, et cetera. It's difficult to build trust over a screen. Would you say that you agree? Would you disagree? How can we still make these principles relevant in a world that is now often governing online?
Yeah, it's a great question, because, I mean, and this is his whole point about the planning adaptively. And that is some of the changes we made, whether it's virtual Zoom meetings or working at home or online sales, they have pros and cons. There's some definite benefits that we want to keep. But this notion of plan adaptively is also, you know, some of them have downs, have cons as well. And how are we going to deal with that? And so you're going to see the new normal is going to be a bit of a hybrid. We're going to keep the best of what we learned during COVID, including remote meetings. Some meetings are going to be remote. They have some advantages. They save costs. They save, you know, the environment and pollution, time, travel. You can engage people. We have annual general meetings now that have 10 or 20 times more people because they're meeting virtually. There's a lot of benefits, but there's also some downsides. So how do we go back to the best part of meeting in person? And how do we take advantage of all the different options we have to offset some of those downsides that we've learned about? But I don't like the expression, but we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We want to keep the best of the innovations that work, but then also understand, yeah, they weren't 100% perfect. Working at home, you know, a lot of employers abuse their employees and make them work, expect them to work crazy hours now. You know, online sales have downsides too. So it's a question of finding the best parts and then figuring out how we're going to offset them, weaving them together.
I like
and that's a really good segue to our next book, which is called Virtually There. Ooh. And it's in the pipeline. It'll probably be out. I don't know, Carrie, you would know better than me, but it'll probably be out in 6 to 8 weeks, something like that. And there'll be strategies in that book for how you engage people in an online environment.
Let's talk about that. And Michelle, by the way, go ahead and pick a winner for the next book here. But You called my team. You know, you're in my private mastermind, Fire Ring, and I get to see you in a couple days, spend the whole day with you. Can't wait. But you basically said, we want to do 12 books this year or 13 or something amazing. Why would you say that the industry leader in governance says we're going to make resources our priority, we're going to get these books out? What was kind of the motivation and the thought behind that?
Well, I think it's part of that pivoting. I think about in our organization, what we do is consult to boards. We provide director education programs all over the world. But that's meant that we spend months out of every year, all of us, the whole team, on the road, traveling around, getting exhausted and eating lots of rubber chicken dinners. And COVID brought us this opportunity for a rapid pivot to the online environment. And we had been slowly transitioning for some time, but it was taking way too long for my liking to get there. But our clients now, they always preferred us to be there in person, but COVID made it possible for our clients to be much more receptive to our strategy. And so the benefit of COVID for us is we were able to quickly pivot, and we've published 2 books this year. We've got all these other ones in the pipeline.
Yes.
And we've done all of that at the same time as growing our consulting and training, where most consultants went like this, we are like this. And we spent all of this time that we would have been in airports and running around the world, we now spend focused on these legacy projects that we have wanted to do. You know, you think about ruthless prioritization. These are projects we've wanted to get to for years, but we couldn't find the time. And now we have it. We've cleared our calendar. We will not go back to the hectic pace that we had in the past. We've got a healthier, more balanced lifestyle. So we've pivoted, we've ruthlessly prioritized, and now we have a plan that we're adapting because we believe governance matters. It makes a difference. And when organizations and families and churches and corporations are well governed, the world is a better place to be in. And so we'll invest our time now in these legacy projects, these legacy books, and put them out for all you guys to read and enjoy.
Books are powerful. Books change lives. Books are around forever. I mean, I'm a big fan of books. You will write in 1 year more books than I've written in 17 years. So what I'm saying is that I'm proud of you. I'm really proud of you. I'm proud of your company. We're honored to be your publisher. We're honored to for you to do the part you do, the writing, and we do the marketing and the distribution. Let's give away the next book. It's Nikki Phillips Martin. Nikki Phillips Martin, huge congrats to you. We're going to get this brand new book out to you. We're going to talk about the next prize, and then we'll go to Rob with a question. The next prize is that people will get, this is pretty cool, a free registration to our new series, What Every Board Needs to Know. And it's called the ESG Era. Rob, do you know what that means, or do I need to ask Deborah? I don't even know what the ESG era is. Do you know what that means?
Well, the ESG era is it's environmental, social, and governance. So it's really it really speaks to what we're seeing in the broader world and a change in the way business leaders look at business as more than just a profit center, that we have to be good corporate stewards? Citizens.
Yes.
And think about our impact on the environment, think about our impact on society in general, and govern effectively in order to do that. So that, you know, ESG is really, it used to be called corporate social responsibility, but it's so much more. It's a much bigger area and really is an area that all organizations are looking at for a number of reasons. Some because investors demand that you have really good ESG programs or they won't invest in you. But others just because they have social conscience and they understand that, for instance, climate change is worldwide. The number one risk to every organization in the world is climate change. And yet we continue to ignore it, much to our peril in the long run, because we tend to think more about the near-term risks. You know, what's going to affect me today or this quarter before our next earnings? Whereas climate change is a generational but much larger risk that corporations around the world are understanding. They can't ignore it any longer.
One more time. ESG?
Environmental, social, and governance.
Yeah. So we have this 4-session series that starts actually tomorrow. And we'll talk in our first session about, well, what is ESG? We'll answer that question, Carrie. And then we're going to take 3 weeks to talk about the E, the S, and the G. And everything, what every board needs to know. And we'll have some tools, some assessments that they can use to assess where their board is at in terms of their own ESG profile and score.
And not only will this be helpful for the business because it helps their conscience, it helps camaraderie, culture, but you're saying that, like Rob mentioned, it may even attract certain investors. Put it this way, it's not a marketing tool. People don't do it for marketing reasons, but you can leverage it as part of your story. Do you agree?
You can leverage it because what it will do is if you don't pay attention to ESG, it will turn away investors.
It's negative PR.
Exactly. Investors now expect organizations to pay attention to ESG. And if you don't, they think about you as a non-ESG organization. And they do not invest in your company. There's rating agencies that will rate your company. And it absolutely has an impact on whether people will invest in you or not.
Wow. See, I love learning stuff. So this was amazing. Who wants a ticket to... It's a $200 value. Who wants a ticket for their business? ESG era, what every board needs to know. It's got the whole profiling, the score. Here's what I want you to do. If you want us to pick you, type in shared if you shared this. And along with share, type in one little tip that you learned. Because again, repetition is huge. And if we can see a few people say, I learned this or I thought of that, that would be fantastic. All right, let's go to a couple other questions. This one's going to go to David. Do you have some examples of organizations that have pivoted? I know you work with a lot of different companies. Do you have any?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have amazing examples. We had a local distillery. No, this is serious. The local distillery, and they made like, hard liquor for people to drink. And when the COVID came along, they switched their production lines and they started making hand sanitizer. They bottle hand sanitizer. And so not only did they replace their income, but they did something good for society, for the community. They met a need.
Wow.
We had a high-end clothing manufacturer that retooled their whole clothing line, started making PPE for frontline workers, doctors and nurses. Oh, yeah. We had one client that's in engineering, and they had a product that it's actually an electronic sniffer. You put it in the lobby of a company, and it can sniff for, toxins and stuff in
the
air.
No way.
And so they retooled it that it could sniff for COVID, and now they sell this to companies that you have this little COVID sniffer and can determine if you got COVID in your plant or in your office or in your team. Oh, these are just some examples of amazing, amazing pivots. And these are changes that are going to last a lifetime in terms of their benefit to society. It's phenomenal.
So whereas some people are saying that, hey, COVID took us out, COVID's a negative, blah, blah, blah. You're saying other companies, because they're governed well, they can make those quick pivots. They don't have to have 7-hour meetings about, all these ridiculous.
Exactly.
One time, I'm not even joking. All right, ready? One time we had at my past organization, a 2.5-hour meeting about how to receive collection on Christmas Eve. Boxes or pass the basket. Oh my God.
I hear you. Yeah.
Rob, I was sitting in that meeting and I'm like, I was not put on earth to spend 2.5 hours of my life determining if we should pass the basket or put a box in the back. But what is that a symptom of, Rob? Because I know it sounds ridiculous and it is, but it's true. What was that a deeper symptom of it? Was it fear? Was it people pleasing? Was it a scare to make a decision? What do you think?
Well, it certainly wasn't groupthink. You definitely had a group of people who didn't think alike, which is a good thing.
Oh, okay. So there's a little positive there. Okay.
But you have to have some structure and some guidance through the chair and determine, simple decisions like that in a much quicker fashion. And a good chair will get you there.
So a good chair
will understand.
We're making a decision
before they ever get to that meeting. They will understand what is a decision that's going to be difficult for the group because there's a lot of discourse that's, there's a split.
Yeah.
And they'll have a plan on how to get to consensus or even just drive a vote. Once if it's something like that, a good chair somewhere along the line will think, I think I've got a majority for one side or the other. And this probably isn't an important decision, so I'm just going to drive a vote. And if we get a majority, we can move on to something more important or something else. But it's having a process in place and a chair in place that allow you to do that.
And then also just
knowing what you're supposed to do as a board, because you also, for us, when you tell that story, first of all, you're meeting every week. Well, this isn't governance. This is running an operation if you're meeting every week. Just that to begin with tells us that you're an operational board. You're not a governing board. You're there to do the work of the organization or you feel you are just by the number of times you meet, let alone how often.
That's so good.
Yeah, it's also a symptom of a lack of empowerment because, there should be like somebody in the church who's just empowered to decide how you're going to take up collection. It should not be a decision of a board. So it's a sign of a lack of empowerment. And the more you can push power down an organization, the more the organization will grow and flourish. But if you try and hang on to power at the top, you're putting a leadership lid on the organization, and you keep it from growing.
This is so good. This is so good. We're going to pick a winner, and then we're going to give away the final prize valued at $1,000. But let's give away the ESG, and that what goes to Trevor Johnson. So
excellent.
Big win for Trevor. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see you tomorrow, Trevor.
Awesome. Awesome. So
clear your calendar.
Yeah. So Michelle's going to get that to Trevor. The final prize that we're going to go to is quite amazing. It's free registration to the module one of the Professional Director Certification Program, $995 value. What is that, the Professional Director Certification Program?
Well, the Professional Director Education and Certification Program is a certification program. We own the trademark for the name Professional Director. And if you want to call yourself a professional director or be one, you need to go to our school. And so we have an online school that we run. You can take it in a couple of different ways, either all on your own, you can do it as self-study, or you can join a guided cohort. We run a number of them every year. We do week-long intensives. There's 6 modules. There's quizzes. There's exams. There's required reading. There's continuing education requirements. It's a legit internationally recognized governance education and certification program for professional directors. And so we're going to give away module one. And
that's fantastic. Michelle, if you can put links to their website, I know it's an incredible website. Rob, I got a quote for you, and then I'll ask David to weigh in. I remember back doing my doctorate. I don't remember anything except for this one point, because it resonated. I was in such pain with poor governance that I'm like, that's it. But here's the quote. It said, when unity is the highest goal, ultimate power is given to the most dysfunctional. So let me say that again. When unity is the highest goal, the ultimate power in an organization is given to the most dysfunctional. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think for boards, consensus is the ideal. You want to get to consensus on an issue, but consensus doesn't necessarily mean unity. Doesn't mean everyone is going to agree. You only really need the majority to agree.
So when we say everybody's got to agree or we can't leave this room, that becomes a crutch.
Yeah, because if you don't have everyone in agreement, ideally, you're going to spend some time to understand why they're not in agreement. And sometimes that's because there's an inconsistent understanding of the problem. But sometimes it's just an entrenched idea in someone. Mm. And you've got a person perhaps on the board who's unwilling to listen to a dialogue.
Becomes politics.
Yeah, we don't debate at a board. We have a dialogue. But dialogue means you have to listen to the other person. And you have to accept the chance that they're right and you're wrong. Or that together you can come up with a better plan than either of you had on your own. But if you're not open to that change, open to that other person to truly listen to them, and you're stuck and there's politics involved, then trying to get to unity means you're going to have to come down to their level because they're not going to move.
Wow.
So that's not where we want to live.
And a lot of that can be cultural. In our book, Governance Solutions, there's a whole chapter on boardroom culture and the 5 types of boardroom culture. And in the culture, it's called a people culture. That's where you tend to get leaders who want unity. They want unanimous votes on everything. And so if you're interested in finding out about boardroom culture and how to assess it and how to recognize it and what to do about dysfunctional boardroom cultures, that would be the book for you.
This is so good. I'm glad. I mean, I couldn't even remember if I wrote a 600 page book about all the different chapters, but I think that's the chapter you're talking about?
Types of boards.
That's five
culture
types of boards.
Is back probably somewhere around, I don't know, 17, 18, somewhere.
So you're talking about five types of cultures.
Boardroom cultures. There's five different boardroom cultures.
That is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I see it. Wow, look at you. All right, so folks, listen, this, anybody who can be that smart that they remember the chapters in a 600 and they're writing 13 more. Oh my gosh. Let's give away the big deal. Let's give away the amazing prize here, the treasure trove. We're going to give away the $995 value module one. And this is for the director. This is for the Professional Director Certification Program. So folks, if you want this, I want you to do this. Tag somebody. So literally tag somebody who says, you know, my friend Greg, listen to this recording. Anybody who, listen, you could change someone's life. I mean, I was sharing a lot about the negativity in my life, but when I'm led well, oh my gosh. I remember switching organizations and going into a well-led one, light, easy,
like a breath of fresh air,
joy. David, talk about that. The difference. I mean, what's the difference?
There is. I mean, one of the privileges we have is to go into boardrooms and to observe their meetings in order to give them feedback. And every once in a while, sadly, it's not all the time, but every once in a while, we just see a great board, and a great board is you know, you can't even tell who the members of the board are and who the members of management are. That's how much they trust and respect one another. They roll up their sleeves. They're all there to act in the best interest of the organization. Everybody trusts that you're there for the right motives. You're not going to be thin-skinned about why somebody's saying something and take offense. They're well led by a chair who's neutral, professional, conductor. You know, they're focusing on what matters. The materials that they're getting are high level. They're important. They're values driven. You know, all of the things are clicking. And it's kind of like watching a great professional athlete. Mm. They make it look so easy. You wonder, wow, how come every board isn't like this? But that professional athlete didn't get that way without years and years of practice and systematic processes and training and coaching and over and over and over again. That's what happens with these boards that are great. It didn't just happen. It was the result of systematic governance, leadership, chairing over the years. And bam, when you see it happen, oh, that's the place you want to work. That's the place you want to serve on a board.
I love it. Michelle, if you can pick the final winner, that will be fantastic. For those that have a faith base, Deborah, even the Trinity, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, governance, even among those three.
The differing roles.
Differing roles.
And sharing of power. Yeah. The way in which they do that and the lines between them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this. All right, here we go. Drum roll. Rob, you want to give us a drum roll here? I don't know.
Maybe we need a gavel. Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, here we go. All right. So this is the final winner, and it is Michelle Swanson. And I'll tell you why. I don't know why they picked her, but because she says, Tim Hovind, we need this. So I don't know a better reward or honor than, you know, we're still close to 50 people watching this thing live. I mean, this has been fantastic. Deborah, I'm going to end with you, but I'm going to go to Rob first. Rob, last word, David last word, and then Deborah last word for your amazing audience. What thoughts do you have?
I want to thank everyone for showing up today. For one, we you know, this would be nothing without all the people that have come here today. And just as a final thought, you know, in scary times, all the assumptions we make when we set our strategy are now no longer true. So that's a time when we have to relook at our strategy, because all of our assumptions are out the window.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right, David, what do you have?
Well, ever since I was little, I've been dedicated to helping businesses and people make better choices and get through tough times. And so it's just a privilege to be able to thank you, Kerry, for publishing this book and bringing together people today on its launch. And it's our hope and prayer that you'll find this a real help to get through one of the toughest years maybe in your life, and to emerge from the other side as that butterfly just soaring. So thank you.
Oh, that's so good. And listen, you've been doing this thing for a long time, and I appreciate that. Deborah, how do you feel knowing that, you know, this is your passion and this is kind of the culmination of just one of the many books you're going to do this year?
Well, I just feel like I'm living my best life. I'm loving my life right now. And I'm almost hesitant to say this, but in a way, I'm grateful for COVID. And it's forced me to stop, to slow down, to use my mind and be more clear. I'm very grateful, Kerry, for your book, Unhackable, because it helped me get some clarity around some of this stuff. So good on you. And I'll just a plug for Kerry's book, Unhackable. If you don't have it, you need to get it. But it really helped me get clarity. Awesome. What we've done over the years is we have helped boards make order out of chaos in the boardroom. That's what we do. And so we help them get clarity around where they should pivot, how they should prioritize, where they need to have those adaptive plans. And so when you think about this book, Governing in Scary Times, that's what it's there for. And in that book, there's 187 strategic questions that boards can ask themselves to make sure that they do exactly that, that they pivot and they I'm losing my P words here, but they do all three of those things. And the questions are there to help do that.
Absolutely. Well, folks, this was an absolute blast. We got a roll, but it was great being with you all. Thanks so much. And you'll see us for more book launches. Take great. Care.
Thanks, Kerry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kerry.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Igniting Souls podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Show up, filled up, and become a member of the tribe. Visit us on the web at carrieoberbrunner.com. Remember, the most powerful weapon on earth is the human soul on fire.